call to order the Planning Commission Board of Adjustment meeting for April 22nd, 2025. And the meeting is being recorded and audio will be posted on the city website. Anybody wishing to speak, please raise your hand to be recognized by the chair and then state your name and address and you can talk. And we'll do call to order.
Hey, Mike.
I did a call to order. I mean, we'll do roll call.
Hey, Mike. Fred.
Don.
Bob.
And Gary.
Additions or deletions to the agenda? I have an addition. I'd like to put an item C under new business to talk about enclosing an existing space, whether it be a woodshed being enclosed or something else. That's it. And we do have a couple public hearings tonight. And the first one is interim use permit application 0525 to operate a temporary portable asphalt plant for 4 weeks from midway to mid-June. And the subject property is located south of County Road 1 and east of County Road 66 and is described as the south one-half of the northeast one-fourth of the southwest one-fourth of the section 29, township 138, range 27. Property ID is 22290510. Applicant is Anderson Brother Construction. Property owner Brian and Colleen Kobe. And with that, I will turn it over to you.
Good evening, Chair Sanser, Planning Commission. The applicant, Anderson Brothers Construction, is seeking an interim use term to operate a temporary portable asphalt plant. The specifics of the proposed operation are listed in your packet tonight, addressing haul routes, general operation information, noise, dust, pollution, and erosion control. I'm happy to address any questions that you may have. I believe the applicant is here as well.
Unless the board has any questions, we've been through this a couple times, so.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. It seems like there was a, the request is for operations of hours 7 to 8, whereas further in the document it said the typical hours of operation were 7 to 7.
Correct. Our ordinance does require that, I believe it is a 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Friday, no weekends and no holidays.
And this is a request for 7 to 8.
This is from 7 to 8. If you notice on the findings and the conditions at the end of the staff report, there is a blank space where you are free to fill in the approved hours and dates. In the past, this would be the fourth IUP, I believe, that we have on record for Anderson Brothers to use the Dobie Pit. And each time it has been approved from 7 to 7 and Monday through Friday.
Okay. On this particular project, is 8 o'clock required because of the size or just in case you get in bad weather? Or why do you think you want to do
8 o'clock? Yeah. 8 o'clock. And just because if that extra hour gets us the job done faster. So for us, it's there's daylight hours. That's an extra hour. And then, you know, this time of year, it's a little bit more important. We have longer daylight hours. So we'd like to go that extra hour. That's 500 tons that we can get out more. And it would shorten up the timeline being there. So that's why we ask. And then Saturday's the same thing. If we have like 2 or 3 days of rain, Saturday's pretty important to us to work those. If we have a really good week of good weather, we generally don't work Saturdays, but we like to have that Saturday option. Just to, we're trying to get this jet project done so we can get out of here before Memorial Day is kind of our goal on this project. So.
You didn't waste any time getting started once your equipment was
here. Yeah, once the frost went out, we were here. Yeah. And that's one of the things that I'd like a little bit of a change to my original statement that an application that was mid-May. Well, you can see we got an early start this year. We'd like to start May 1st on the asphalt plant. We have some patching to do for these turn lanes that we're doing. So we were asking to maybe change that from May 1st to June 1st instead of the mid-May to June, mid-June. So
the last application Did you ask for 8 o'clock as well?
I did, you guys gave me 7 to 7. You did give me Saturday of the last application. I appreciate that.
So we went 7 to 7, and then you got all of Saturday?
Yeah.
And how late was it on Saturday? I don't recall.
We generally worked till 5 o'clock on Saturday, usually, so.
Did we receive any public comment at the meeting?
We did not.
I guess I feel if we were getting complaints, we had a lot of opposition of it, but I guess I would rather us get the job done quicker and be out of here quicker for that extra hour of daylight, I guess.
Is there some kind of machinery running there now?
Yeah, our crusher is running.
Okay, I thought I heard something running. And this will be like the Cass County project where
almost exactly
the blacktop gets stripped off, gets hauled back in there.
Correct.
Part of it's recycled.
It's all recycled.
Like it was done last year. Yeah.
It really should only take us a couple weeks of actual high traffic paving, but you know, with springtime, you could get a whole week out.
Are you covering the present road or are you carrying it out? Are you going over the present blacktop?
It would be a mill and fill, they call it, so they mill the top 2 inches off.
Okay. But there'll still be some hard left then.
Yeah, and they're doing some extra turning, as you can see, some culvert improvements.
Thank you for that.
How far is it? It's not pertinent to this, but I'm just curious. So how far are you paving?
From Emily to pretty much 66, or just on this side.
Okay.
This is where we left off our other project in number one. So.
I have another question, just from my understanding. The bond, I think, for reclamation,
was 35.
So this is a, and I know that, as you've said, that we've done a conditional use permit in the past year. They've done that kind of service. So what's the reclamation for? Because this isn't going to be returned to its natural state, I mean.
No. So, correct me if I'm wrong, but so Anderson Brothers has a $15,000 annual bond that they have on the site. And I believe that's when you finally do abandon it, then that will take care of that, or?
What a reclamation bond does is just, if we were to go bankrupt and leave town, which we've been here for 85 years, I don't ever see that. That way the landowner has something, has that $15,000 to hire somebody else to stabilize everything and get everything.
Mm-hmm. So
this $35,000 bond that is placed for that, this IUP is just for any environment, something happens to the asphalt plant, it's actually just covering the plant in case something happens.
That's what it is. Yep.
We would cover the cost, but it would be, again, if something went bankrupt, we left down, the city would have something to clean up an environmental mess or something.
So the pit itself has a bond, and then the activities that we're discussing tonight has a separate one.
Got it.
Were there any complaints from the last time they operated, the last year?
I do.
I wasn't here until about August, end of July.
Yeah.
And I didn't. Yeah. I missed that meeting.
Last complaint I got was, I think 3 or 4 years ago on the crushing because of the backup alarms. So then we switched our backup alarms, and now we have a new thing. It's called white noise, which is MSHA, so our mining safety approves it. It's just you can hear it when you're close to it. So sounds like that, but it's no longer this beep, beep, you know, so. And I haven't had any complaints on this. We're using the white noise right now, so.
And generally, the real noise is the crushing process. And how long is that going to last? I don't think it's said here.
Yeah, that'll be done already. If one more week, it's all that should go. So that was a fairly short process there.
And you're running till 7 now?
Is that 7 to 7. There are no weekends on that, so. This is a temporary, you know, until 8 o'clock, and we're just trying to get this job done as quick as we can before Memorial Day hits and a lot of people come into town. But.
As far as the times, we had a pretty good discussion, I think, last time, and there were quite a few people here, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we gave you at that time 7 to 7. I don't remember Saturday also, did we?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we did. Yeah. All my conditions in last year.
So I would defer to that discussion and protect those people and everybody's interest by trying to stay consistent with what we're allowing for hours of operation. So I would say 7 to 7 on Saturday is my opinion. 7 to 7 Monday through Saturday. Well, Monday through Friday with Saturday is possible.
So Don, are you saying, how late can they run on Saturday? Are you thinking?
If we got 7 to 7, I suppose the same thing would apply on a Saturday.
I don't remember, did we have any complaints when it was 7 to 7?
No. Nobody calls in.
So I don't,
No.
Another hour is a big deal.
The only thing we always say is that, you know, if you have that extra hour every day, that usually cuts off 2 or 3 days at the end because you're getting that much more tonnage out on the highway. It's why it shortens up the time to be in there. So
it's another hour of truck traffic, right?
Exactly.
Back and forth. But we still, because daylight savings time, we still have daylight.
Correct.
So this, if we set a fall,
especially in the spring, the fall doesn't really matter.
Might be a little different. Right, if it correct. Was in the fall when you know it's dark earlier and what have you.
But and I think it's different too if it's Memorial Day to Labor Day where
there's more traffic.
People at their cabins and things like that. Right now, this is before the cabin people come using Memorial timelines.
The concern the last time was with neighbors and noise going beyond 7 o'clock was the reason. Yeah. We changed it to 7. Kept 7 to 7, which is actually what our ordinance says, or our recommendation, I should say. So I'm open to, you know, we can take a vote on if we want 8 o'clock or 7 o'clock. That's fine with me. I believe the reason that people wanted it to shut off, and I know you would like to keep it going, but they wanted to come home and not have to listen to that noise for another hour was really what the concern was. And that's all I have to say.
But the noise is more the truck traffic. I mean, the crusher's running now. How much noise does the plant make?
That's more plant's quieter than the crusher.
That's what I thought, yeah.
Like you said, the worst, I hardly ever get complaints about the crushing. The old days, it used to be, they used to have jaw crushers, and you hear the slamming. Now they have what they call cone crushers, which it is quite a bit.
Yeah,
but the backup alarms, I can't deny they are so long that we've switched that now, especially in neighborhoods like the Dobie Pit.
I hear now, it doesn't change. It's just consistent.
Right.
When they do logging, you hear the saw.
Yeah, right.
And then you don't hear it, and then you hear the saw. But with the crusher, it's just a continuous.
Yeah, and same thing with on the highway projects, you have the backup alarms. I know when my highway got done in front of my place, the only thing I would hear at 6 o'clock in the morning is like the blade backing up or the cat, the turn lanes.
Yeah.
It's just like.
Yeah.
Can we take a straw vote before we make a motion on the time?
I think we can. I mean,
I think consistency is important. You know, from one permit to the next, unless there was something really specific where you really need an extra hour for 2 of the 8 weeks or 9 weeks. But I think I kind of support Don in fact. Consistency is important.
7 to 7.
That's 2 for 7. You're for 8.
I'm always
7 or 8. I can go either way.
I agree with you. I think consistency is important. I do remember when the public. I mean, they're not here now, but I remember when they came here, they were concerned about that extra hour because it's kind of twilight. And if we're giving you Saturday, I mean, that's pretty generous, it seems. So I'd say 7 to 7.
Can you live with that?
Yeah, I mean, if we have Saturday 7 to 7, like you say, you gave us that last year. Springtime is the reason why we'd love to work longer.
Saturday's consistent with last time.
And when's your paving date start?
So May 1st, right? Next week.
All right, what if he gets into a 7 or 8, 9 day rain?
That's only a whirlwind.
Can you come back, Bethany, and just say, hey, could I beef it to 8 o'clock for the last 2.5 weeks or something?
Oh, right.
Is that something that's...
We would have that opportunity. In the ordinance, it does say that pit hours can be extended when an emergency exists. An emergency is defined as a short-term, unplanned, and unexpected event. So if you had 9 days of rain, obviously I think there's room in the ordinance to make those changes.
So is that something we have to add?
That's just what it says in the ordinance, so I'm thinking that we don't need to specifically call that out. If that were to happen, please contact us, and we'll go through the proper avenues to make sure that you can continue on your project.
Is there any problem with that May 1st start a little bit earlier than I originally had?
I don't see any problem with that.
No.
So, what date, we need to put a date in here. What date do you want to start?
May 1st and June 1st.
May 1st, yeah.
If we had that 9-day, then I would say to be safe on June 15th, but if we had the same thing where we run into a 9-day, I could also extend that length too, correct? If it was a 9 days of rain and...
We can add that to the condition, that it can be an automatic extension for the purposes if you wanted to add something like that. Is that something that you're interested in doing?
I think, yeah.
I agree.
And to do what?
Reduce the whole discussion.
To do what? I missed.
Allow an extension.
An extension.
Oh, yeah, well, that's in the ordinance we already talked about.
Yeah, string of bad weather.
Yeah.
So your real initial drop dead date is June what? We have to put the date in here.
Well, that's why I was saying that. I mean, we should easily get it done before June 1st, but if there was some...
He would talk to Beth about an extension based on quotas in the ordinance. Mm-hmm.
So we can add a condition that just says automatic extension for days missed due to rain or unanticipated other delays? Any other unanticipated delays?
So it'd be 12?
That would be condition number 12. Also, I would like to, and I know it's going to take some time, but I'd like to read through this. With an IUP, it is required that the applicant agrees to all of the conditions. So I think it would be good to read those into record, and then if you could, on behalf of the owners and the applicants, if you could agree to those, that would be great. Are you ready for that now, or do you want to continue the discussion?
Yes, sure.
Okay. All right, so the first condition is all use shall be in substantial conformance with the presented plan as shown. Deviations from the presented plan will require modified approval by the Planning Commission. Number two is the asphalt hot mix facility shall be between the months of May 1st and June 1st. Number three, the asphalt hot mix facility may operate from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday. The facility may not operate on weekends or... Well, we're going to change that. May not operate on federal holidays. Equipment maintenance may take place during those hours when the hot mix facility is not allowed to operate. Number four, the applicant shall notify the city of the start date of operation of the hot mix facility at least 1 week prior to commencement of the operation. Number five, all apparatus associated with the hot mix asphalt facility shall be removed from the property within 2 weeks after the conclusion of asphalt production. Number six, all truck traffic associated with the hot mix facility shall enter and exit the property using the Hall Road in the northeast corner of the property adjacent to County Road 1. Number seven, Anderson Brothers shall designate primary and alternate contacts who will be available for citizens to contact with any questions and or concerns when the temporary hot mix asphalt facility is in use. Number eight, a bond of $35,000 should be established to cover reclamation costs associated with the hot mix facility. Number nine, all legal fees and other costs associated with the hot mix facility incurred by the City of 50 Lakes shall be reimbursed by the applicant. Number 10, a copy of the SWIP shall be provided to the city before the hot mix facility may operate. Number 11, loaders, bulldozers, and other machinery and equipment on the subject property must utilize Mine Safety and Health Administration approved reverse activated strobe lights in lieu of audible reverse alarms. I believe those are what you just referenced earlier. Okay. And then number 12 we're adding is that automatic extension for days missed due to rain delays or other unanticipated delays.
I have one question on 8. Mm-hmm. Is there a date, or is this bond already in place, or is there a date that you guys have to have that bond?
Before we operate, so tomorrow I'll pull that bond. It usually takes a week. So.
All right, thanks, Catherine.
Do you agree to all of those conditions?
I do.
Excellent.
I'm going to ask for a motion.
I'll make a motion to approve IUP 0525 with 17 findings of fact and 12 conditions.
I'll second that motion.
All right. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next item on the agenda is conditional use permit application 0625 for the installation of a residential renewable energy system within the Shoreland Residential Land Use District. The subject property is located at 43835 Kegel Lake Road. Property ID is 221-50510. And the applicant is Freedom Forever LLC and property owner Jason Conister and Casey Carl. And with that, I'll turn it over to you, Bethany.
Thank you so much. The applicant is seeking a conditional use permit for the installation and placement of a residential renewable energy system on their existing structure. The panels will be flush mounted on the dwelling. The panels will sit just a few inches above the shingles and will not substantially impact the height of the structure. Renewable energy systems are in allowed use within the Shoreland District with a CUP. It's very similar to all the other applications we've had. I'd be happy to answer any questions except for how a solar panel works. I won't be of much help in that.
Works real good.
Also, just in the staff report, I want to point out, I did include a picture. For some reason in their site plan, they indicated that the dwelling was 60-some feet from the OHW. If that were the case, they would need a variance to expand upon the non-conforming structure. A quick desktop analysis with GIS just confirmed that it met the 100-plus OHW setback.
Did we get any public feedback? Any
None.
Comments?
Okay. The DNR did not give us any feedback as well.
Yeah, on page 27, you have condition use permit 0624.
That would be a typo. I apologize.
Pardon?
Oh, it is 24. It is for 25.
Yep. Got it.
Are the property owners here?
They are not.
Well, I went through the design, and then I went to these guys, because I was curious about batteries. I didn't see anything about batteries, and I think most people that put these in, they don't mess with batteries because it gets to be very expensive, plus you got a maintenance headache. But I thought, well, I'm going to try a couple of these QData things, and I found out that you have to have the username and password, so they weren't very helpful. So I think it's more for probably the installer in case they got a question on how to put something up. Otherwise, to me, it looked pretty straightforward. And we've had a few people in our community that have been going more solar.
I think this is the third one, just in the last, 8 months or so?
Yeah. I've got a nephew that we just had dinner with him on Sunday. He's an environmental attorney that lives in Duluth. And he said they just put solar panels and have a garage wired for electric vehicle.
Okay.
Being an environmental attorney, he doesn't want to buy another gas powered car, so he's getting ready for it. So, anyhow.
And we have talked about, amending the ordinance just to allow these without a CUP. My concern then is that somebody comes with a plan outside of the scope of what we've seen, which has been flush mounted, very little, change to anything, no change to impervious, no change to most.
Well, that could be part of the writings. It conformed to whatever the standard had been at that point. Can you do it that way? And then,
that's something that we should probably talk about at the end of the at the end of the meeting tonight. Let's do that. I've got a couple other ordinance amendments I'd like to talk about.
Yeah, because not everybody puts them on a roof.
Right.
Well, I don't think we have anybody here that wants to. I'll open up public comments if anybody wants to make a comment. Otherwise, we'll close the public comments, and I guess any question amongst the board or
I thought the same thing when I read this. I thought, should we really go through this extra step or something like this?
It's in the ordinance and it's required, and so, you know.
So I'll ask for a motion.
I'll make a motion to pass conditional use permit 0625 with three conditions.
Okay. 14 findings of fact.
So do you see those? I missed those.
It's 34 condition.
Page 35.
Yeah.
34
and 35. Yep. So, yeah, page 34 has got the staff findings.
14 staff findings.
With the findings, with the, thank you, Fred, 14 findings and three conditions.
No, there's actually only one condition. There's room for two others. On page 35 is the condition.
Well, I stand corrected. Just a second here now. Somewhere I thought it said no conditions, but I must be mistaken. Okay. I stand corrected.
One condition.
One condition. Thanks, Fred.
You bet.
Good to keep you straight.
Yeah.
I'll second that motion.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Open forum. Everybody get a chance to read over the March 25, 2025 minutes. And if there's no additions or deletions in the minutes, could I get a motion to approve?
I'd like to make a motion to approve the minutes.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Carried. New business, meets and bounds, split 0725 to split a 3.64 acre parcel of the Shoreland Residential Land Use District. So the property is located at 39098 Ox Lake Circle and 223-20517. The property ID and applicant owner is Jill and Bennett Gibbs.
Thank you so much. The applicant is requesting to subdivide a 3.6 acre parcel into two tracts shown on the certificate of survey as tract C and tract D. Tract C is 80,757 square feet. It has 66 feet of frontage along Ox Lake Circle, which is a public road. The proposed parcel is 200 feet wide and contains 40,128 square feet of buildable area. It is adequately sized for a subsurface sewage treatment system and well. Tract D is 80,892 square feet and has approximately 81 feet of frontage along Ox Lake Circle, which is a public road. The proposed parcel is also 200 feet wide and contains 40,010 square feet of buildable area. It's adequately sized for subsurface sewage treatment system and well. Our ordinance requires on a natural environment lake 200 feet width minimum, along with 40,000 square feet in buildable area minimum and 80,000 square feet for the overall lot. The applicant is here tonight as well if you have any questions.
Based on the staff findings, everything is compliant.
Yeah.
I really don't have any questions.
There will be site suitability submitted once there was a winter window that was signed for that, and once the ground is thawed enough, then those site suitabilities will be submitted.
You know, in the agenda, you refer to meets and bounds lots. 07:25 and also about split 08:25. And on the phrase it that way.
Pardon?
Somewhere.
There's two separate applications. We're just dealing with application 07:25 right now.
Okay, two steps. All right.
There's two separate lots.
All right.
Yep, so they're treated as separate applications.
And the findings of fact apply to both of them then?
The finding of facts are different for each one because they're different lots. They're different sizes. The acreage is different. The PID is different.
So do we need two motions or one?
Just one.
Just a motion to approve.
Each of them or together?
This is just one application, so we would just need a motion to approve the split of this parcel into two lots that we're discussing.
I make that motion to approve meets and bounds 07-25 with the five staff findings and no conditions.
I'll second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. The next one is meets and bounds lot split 08-25 to split a 7.8 acre parcel within the Shoreland Residential Land Use District. Subject property is located at 39098 Ox Lake Circle. Property ID is 22320518. Applicant and property owner is Joe Gibbs.
This is going to seem very similar. So the applicant is requesting to divide this parcel, which is a 7.84 acre parcel, into two tracts shown on the certificate of survey as tract A and tract B. Tract A is 5.3 acres and has shared frontage, 68.7 feet, with tract B along Ox Lake Circle, which is a public road. The proposed parcel is over 200 feet wide and contains 131,968 square feet of buildable area. The parcel contains a residential dwelling, accessory structures, a subsurface sewage treatment system, and a well. This property is already developed. The creation of this lot does not create any new nonconformities. Tract B is 121,592 square feet and has shared frontage, that same 68.7 feet, with tract A along Ox Lake Circle, which is a public road. The proposed parcel is 200 feet wide and contains 57,515 square feet of buildable area. This parcel as well contains a residential dwelling. They had a guest house. Now this will go on that, and this will become the primary dwelling at this point. So we're not leaving a parcel with an accessory structure, which would be non-conforming. So there is a residential dwelling primary use already established on this parcel, and also a SSTS as well.
You know, I'll just a quick comment. When I first saw this, I thought, well, we have an ordinance that says if it's three parcels or more, it has to have a public road. You recall that discussion? It was based on the development of Mitchell Lake.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But it doesn't pertain here because these are separate parcels, and the first one that we just approved has access to that circle. So it's really the access to the road only. The shared access to these two properties we're talking about now.
Yep.
So, I mean, it doesn't apply.
Correct. And there's an easement written in. You can see on the certificate of survey. There's a couple of easements written in. Once again, we don't read, interpret, nor enforce any easements. However, there is one easement that talks about an alternative access. Just want to be very clear that alternative accesses are allowed. I did speak with the DNR. We did give a little bit of comment back. They are an allowed use versus controlled accesses, which are prohibited.
Mm-hmm.
The difference is that alternative access is allowing people who own riparian rights on a property, so they have waterfront, but it's environmentally better to have one access. And if you know this area, it's got a lot of, you know, it's a natural environment lake, it's got a beautiful wetland area right out in front. So it's for the protection of those properties that there is that. Once again, it's a civil issue. We don't get involved in that, but it isn't allowed to, so.
It's a beautiful property.
Yeah, Gordy had it. He was planning and zoning before.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, this is his place. So. Yeah, it's gorgeous.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. Okay.
Any other discussion or?
I don't think so.
Yeah, make a motion.
All right, I'd like to make a motion for roots and bounds for lot 0825, to split 7.84 acre parcel in the Shoreland District. Subject property is 39098 Ox Lake Circle. Property ID number is 223-20518. The applicant and owner is Jill and Bennett Gibbs. And to include the five staff findings.
I'll second that.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thank you.
Do I need to get anything from you? Or?
I'll contact you on Friday.
Okay.
All right. Thanks so much. Yep.
Thanks.
Yep. Item C. Just an open discussion about enclosing an existing space.
So was that open discussion or new business?
It's under new business. Item C under new business.
Okay, 7C.
And
oh, it's right here.
I mean, there's been some discussion about if you've got an existing three-season porch or a year-round room or something that's up in the air and you want to enclose the underside of it, do you have to have a permit to do that?
The screen portion enclosing the underside?
Underside, so.
What, did you say food shed enclosure before?
No, when I said a wood shed.
A wood shed.
I just thought, yeah, I thought, okay, what if I got a permit 4 years ago to build a 5x8 storage shed for wood with a roof on it. And now I'm done burning wood, and I don't want to make it into a storage shed, I want to put walls on it. Do I have to come in and get a permit to put walls on an existing shed when I'm not changing the size of it, I'm not adding any more roof, so my impervious surface is the same?
I'd say no.
So.
But that's what else.
So,
what do you say?
So
that would be interpreted as an expansion of use, and as we issue land use permits, it would require a permit. Any expansion of use. Yep. And so what that speaks to is if you have, let's say you have that wood shed and now suddenly it's, you screen it in and now it's a pergola. And then suddenly you put water in it and you put a bottle. And then suddenly, you know, a couple of weeks or years go by and things will generally, change their use. There's so many different nuance to it. If this structure is attached to a home, now are you expanding the home? Is there kind of foundation? I know in the past any expansion of use, including taking a crawl space and turning it into a basement, needed a permit. It's an expansion of use. It adds another level of livable or usable area. It's turning a place that is underneath a deck into an accessory structure. So it's always been interpreted that yes, this would include not only permits, but by to do this if it didn't meet setbacks would require a variance as well. One thing I would like to do just in this instance is I would like to get the recommendation of the DNR. They have the shoreland ordinance. Would this require, in their opinion, a permit? And would it require a variance? Would it require these things in order to do that?
Well, I'd like to comment because I think this came up because I have this situation. And I'm speaking as a 50 Lakes resident here, not a planning commission member. But so in my case, I'll just describe this scenario. I have a pretty limited lot, and I have a need for more storage space. So to try to get more ingenious about it, we have a three-season porch that's elevated. And what a nice place to use as a storage space. And actually, I am using it as a storage space now, it's just not enclosed. So it's not, one could say it's not an extension of use or change of use because it's used for storage now, it's just enclosed. So I'm excited about using that space, and I've come to grips that I'm fine paying a building permit for it. I mean, and really it's gonna be semi-rudimentary. It's putting some walls up, and I'm gonna put siding so that my neighbors aren't upset about Mike putting some plywood up and having it look terrible. And it's going to have a rudimentary floor, but it won't have any ceiling because it's right underneath this porch, so the impervious surface won't change. Mm-hmm. I think you'd say that's the case.
Yeah.
So it's no additional impervious surface, and in this case, it's no additional extended footprint. So I think a building permit's appropriate. I happen to, the setback on Eagle, on the lake that we live on, is 100 foot. So that's the question at hand. Should a variance apply here? And I can see an argument that says no, of course, because it's not a change of use for one, extended use, and it's not an extended footprint.
So you're just saying in this case it doesn't meet the setback, so it might need a variance in addition to a permit.
Correct. And I think a permit's appropriate because I'll be, you know, building some things there, nothing very elaborate. But it's a question about the permit, the variance rather. So
defer to Beth.
In a lot of situations, if you take a three-season porch and you turn it into your own living space and it doesn't meet setbacks, a variance is required. What I would propose in this instance is you can't vote, Mike. You'll have to recuse yourself from any vote.
Sure.
But if the Planning Commission would like me to look into this and see if we have, as the City of 50 Lakes, any flexibility to address this issue, because the DNR would really weigh in heavily. I'd like to see if it is just a matter of changing the ordinance.
Sure.
If it is a matter, I will just ask that you recuse yourself because this will be,
of course,
you know, this wouldn't be, this would be for everybody and it wouldn't just be for this one instance.
So if I could, so we did have a discussion about it, and it seemed like, you know, one could see both sides of the scenario. A suggestion was made that we reach out to Justin to see if this scenario had come up here, if he was aware of it. And he said, no, it hasn't, because if there's building like this, it typically would build a building permit, and we wouldn't see it.
Mm-hmm.
I liked his suggestion. He said, because it's in this gray area, mm-hmm. it really should be something that should be brought to the Planning Commission,
mm-hmm.
because it's a local decision. This is our city, and we should make decisions about things that are in a gray zone. How would we like those to land?
So, Bethany, so does the septic rules go into play for this now?
Septic?
Yeah.
The
testing of all that?
Absolutely. So,
if I could just respond mm-hmm. to that, if a variance was required, or is the septic and all these other things part of the building permit process?
It's part of anything. Any permit
issued
has to have a recent compliance within 3 years or an install within 5.
Right. So Bethany brought that to my attention, and we just put a new septic and drain field system in last fall, so it's as new as it can be.
So you're covered.
So covered that, and we did a variance with some expansion before we moved up here 7 years ago. So there's a survey that's relatively new, and the markers are still there. So
you're suggesting that we have the power to not require a variance?
Correct. In that case, because it's existing within the current existing impervious surface, and there's not.
I understand that. That's the best decision, I think.
I would like the opportunity, if the Planning Commission deems it favorable, to reach out to the Minnesota DNR.
Yep.
To see if we do have that ability.
Yep.
If we don't, let's just figure that out right away, right? And then from there, I would like to present you with information so that the Planning Commission would be able to make a well-informed decision with some maybe, you know, discussion of performance standards if you did want to change it. If this is something that's available, I don't know if you'd want to allow anybody to have any structure and just be able to turn it into anything without getting, so you'd want performance standards in place for that.
Sure.
But if you would like to vote on that, and then if this ever came to vote, then once again, you would need to recuse.
So we could vote to waive the setback requirement.
You could vote to have me look into it tonight.
Yeah.
No, but once you look into it, you're going to give
depending,
us a decision?
Yeah, depending on what I find out. If find out first if we have that ability, and then find out second if this is something that is good for the city, not just for this one instance, but if this is good for the city.
So it's all in your ballpark. Right?
So
yep, and a public hearing would have to be held, and there would be a lot of public involvement.
When we rebuilt in the year 2007, it was finished in 2008, and because of the bluff zone setback, we were 5 foot in violation of the top of the bluff zone, so we had to get a variance.
Mm-hmm.
to keep two block walls. And going towards my neighbor, we put on a three-season porch, but it's single-pane glass windows. But that's not at that corner. That's back. That setback meets the setback from the bluff.
Okay.
So if I was to enclose that, change the window, I mean, it is enclosed, but if I was going to change the windows out to thermopane windows and insulate it and put heat out there, I don't think I would need a permit to do that, because we say you can change windows.
Yep.
And you can paint and you can maintain.
Yep.
So I wouldn't need a permit to do that.
Right? No, and it would continue to be a porch, a three-season porch.
Right.
If you wanted to convert that livable area.
Use it year round. Okay.
But in that case, so a permit's not required, and that means also a variance in that case is not required.
If it meets all setbacks and if it's maintenance. But here's the thing, you right now have that livable area that we're talking about.
Right.
If you needed to replace the windows, if you needed to re-roof and put new shingles, if you needed to re-side, you wouldn't need a permit for that.
Okay.
Yeah, no permits necessary for that. That's okay. Considered maintenance.
So the question really is you're going to contact the DNR if he encloses an already approved or permitted piece.
I'll flush it out, and we'll probably talk about as many different circumstances, not just yours, but in keeping with all of that. Just to get as much information, I would want to give you the information so that you could make an informed decision that wasn't in contrast with anything that the state would be opposed to.
The decision about the setback conforming or not conforming is then really with the DNR, is that what you're saying? If they allow us some wiggle room, we still have an ordinance to follow.
Yeah, so there's a lot of things that we have that are local control. Like, we adopt the shoreline ordinance, and we are responsible to administer the shoreline ordinance. However, if we do something that the DNR does not like, we will know. So they will probably help us work through that and revise our ordinance to come back into alignment with what their rules are.
So you want us to make a motion then?
If you would like to just make a motion just to have you look into this and to get information so that at next month's meeting, if there is a meeting next month, if we want to just continue this topic, you could also, I mean, it's not an application now, so you can't table it. So I would like a motion, just direction of what you would like me to do.
When you say talk to the DNR, I see, I don't know how many times, letters are sent to the DNR.
I
didn't
get that too.
No comment. Yes. So I say, well, does the DNR really care?
The DNR does care. And I spend a lot of time talking to the DNR.
But they just don't respond on every permit application.
Correct. And because usually, and especially in 50 Lakes, you have higher standards. So you have standards that are even more restrictive than the shoreline ordinance. So when somebody's asking for a higher impervious on something that the DNR is like, they still need ours. So we're not going to comment. Does that make sense?
Sure.
So unless something is grossly out of line, they don't comment on these because local controls usually are have that, those higher standards.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Which they love, by the way. They really love that. Yeah.
So should we just make a motion?
Well, I guess just one question is if I want to proceed with this project, so I'm waiting for a month for this to take place for one, but could it be a scenario if I just submit all the variance information and write the check, that it could be a yes or no at that time if we decide not to allow it without a variance?
Possible. I can reach out to the DNR fairly quickly. In fact, I'll do that tomorrow, and I can just send an email to everyone we would need time to gather more information. What we don't want to do is have this look like we're working to make this a favorable situation for a planning commission.
Right.
No, and I agree with that completely, of course. But I don't want to wait for a meeting in June.
Right.
If I have to pursue a variance to get that approved.
If you want to get application materials in, the deadline is Monday. For the next meeting. And that's something that if you want to get that. And once again, I'll be in the office Friday if you want to come in.
That'd be fine.
Okay.
I'd like to make a motion for Planning and Zoning Administrator Bethany Sutherland to contact the DNR referencing, how do we want to word this? A enclosure inside the
Look into permitting requirements.
It's the setback we're required, we're talking to the DNR about, not necessarily the enclosure that's covered in our ordinance. Is that correct, Beth?
Pardon?
You're basically talking to the DNR about the setback, you're not talking about the enclosure of the space, that's not part of...
I'll probably throw out many different scenarios, just to see what their response is to that.
All right, it's a good little direction.
All in favor?
Aye.
Who seconded that?
I'll second. I don't think we have a liaison, council liaison report tonight.
No.
Administrative report, we got all the permit stuff in here.
Yep,
I didn't see any enforcements.
Things are doing pretty good. I've looking into a few items, but no formal enforcements as of right now. So, I did want to talk to you about some other ordinance things that maybe you can pass a motion and have me head in that direction as well. The bar and bottle shop reached out to me about some sign information, and that while I was reviewing what's in the ordinance for sign ordinance, I noticed that in the land use matrix, it prohibits off-site signs in all districts, which is very common in most municipalities. An off-site sign is a sign that is advertising a business that is not happening on the parcel. So it's advertising signs, it's the big billboards, it's those things. But then in the ordinance, we have a provision that says off-site signs are allowed with a permit.
Individual use permit.
I don't even think it says that. Oh, Lord. It says...
We had signs for 50 Lakes property owners that we had to get individual use permits for.
We did, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So this...
Actually, we didn't, the property owners did. We had to encourage the property owners to do it.
Okay, this says off-site signs, commercial off-site signs are allowed with permit, which is startling. So that would mean Summit locations could come in and put billboards all along Highway 1. Or County 1. The fact that we would always go with the more restrictive, and your land use matrix specifically says it is not allowed. It says off-site signs, and it says no across everyone. So I would just like to clean up the ordinance and get that provision out of there because it does cause some confusion. I did tell the bar and bottle shop that they cannot put up any more freestanding signs. They already have two, and one's allowed. So
their grandfather did with that.
Those two will be able to keep, but they can't put any more up. Yeah, that's correct.
So no, I think you should correct that.
Okay, so if I can just get a motion asking me to look into that as well.
A motion that you correct the requirement for an off-site sign. Not a motion to. We just want to
change the ordinance.
Yep.
Restrict off-site signs.
Restrict the off-site signs, not allow them. Not restrict them, just not allow them.
Excellent. I will have that ordinance amendment on next month's agenda.
Okay. So, okay. Fred had made a comment, and
I interrupted, didn't I?
A little bit. Yeah.
You have to vote. Sorry.
We need a second and then a vote.
Oh.
Unless you wanted to discuss it.
I'll second.
Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
Okay. I appreciate it.
Fred had brought up the fact that 50 Lakes property owners, we had a member at one time, probably goes back probably 10, 12 years ago now. He came up with this whole Bermichet sign idea to advertise or to make people aware of AIS.
Okay.
And he had a competition amongst the schools and stuff, and there was prizes for whoever came up with the best saying. And we had a set of them up on 136, and we had a set of them on County Road 1. And then we had to go to the individual property owners to make those signs work at 50 miles an hour. They have to be so many feet apart.
Yep.
So we have to go to individual property owners and get them to get an IUP to allow us to put the sign up.
Okay.
And it was a joint venture between the property owners and the city, because the city provided the posts, installed the posts, and we provided the signs and put them up and took them down.
So
that was done with IUPs from the individual property owners.
But if we change the ordinance and they're not allowed, you wouldn't be able to do it today.
They aren't even allowed with an IUP right now, because the land use matrix says they're not allowed. So,
I wonder if that changed.
I'm wondering if this is a, because we're talking off-site advertising signs. We're not talking identification signs or public signs. That's a totally different, and these are in residential areas versus commercial areas. So what I'm talking about is a commercial off-site sign. They're just not allowed. But I can look into that and provide you with the answers at next month's meeting. I will add that, and we'll just discuss that.
To see if that would be allowed today?
Yep. But you're not talking advertising signs. We're talking public information signs. Yep. Okay. And were those signs that was done with, in cooperation with the city of 50 Lakes, correct?
Yes.
That was a formal?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. Actually, the city put up the framework for them.
Yeah.
Okay. In the road right of way?
No.
It was on private property? Okay.
Private property.
But each property owner then had to get an IUP.
Okay.
And then when they came up for renewal again, then we had to go to the property owners to apply for another interim use permit. Now, because it was an IUP, there was a sunset on them, which I believe was a 5-year term.
Okay. I'm going to look into all of that, and I'm going to see if I can't find one, because we'll get more information on that. Just in here, it says off-site size residential even. No. It just flat out says no for that.
Is that like page 81? Is that what you're on?
It is page 83 of the ordinance. Mm-hmm.
Residential signs, you said off-site, right?
So there's on-site signs, there's off-site signs, there's on-site residential signs, there's on-site commercial signs, then there's the same that way. And it gets very, there's a lot of performance standards and a lot of requirements. Everything from area identification signs, you know, if you have a plat that comes in and you have a nice sign that, you know, announces that you've arrived now into whatever development that you've come into. But there's a reason that there isn't a big Golden Eagle Golf Club sign out on the road. They're just not allowed, right? So then they have, I believe they have the county sign that identifies.
Right. Yeah.
And those signs you can obtain from the county. Those are placed in the road right-of-way, and you can purchase those from the county. But their big sign isn't until the property. And that's
why. What about no trespassing signs?
No trespassing signs are exempt, as well as no hunting signs. So those are allowed to be posted. Contractor signs, political signs, for sale signs. There's performance standards for all of those, and most of them are exempt. But the state of Minnesota even has a requirement that requires you to remove political signs X amount of days after an election. So.
And the county, I don't know how they are now, but they're pretty strict about going around and picking up those signs.
Yeah, they don't like
when they had the Cross Lake Art Fair a few years ago, and those were in the county road right away.
Yeah.
And they lost the number of signs.
Yep.
Because the county came by and picked them up.
Yep. And a lot of ordinances don't talk about garage sale signs. They don't, you know, but they usually get placed in road right of way. And quite honestly, as the city, they can go clear the road right of way anytime they want. People will lose their signs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the county just does that. I think they just mow them on down and call it a day. So, yeah. Okay, but I will look into those public information signs and what the permitting process would be like if we had something like that.
And I'll make the motion to adjourn.
Thanks, Fred.
I'll second.
Thank you so much.
Now, can you do that out of